How do I know what I think until I see what I say?
I'm your host, Jacob Goronsky, and welcome to From the Green Notebook, where we create leaders one podcast at a time. So if you don't feel like reading a blog today, then sit back and listen as we discuss some of the most important topics and talk with some of the most innovative leaders of today. So please subscribe and make sure you listen to these exclusive episodes. Try to catch me howling at the moon. Today's episode is sponsored by Emblem Athletic, the best option out there for keeping your unit looking amazing with custom shirts, hoodies, and other gear. They're a veteran-owned business that specializes in making it easy for you. And if you've ever ordered unit gear, you know how difficult it can be. Emblem knows you have better things to do than design gear, collect money, and worst of all, sort through a bunch of shirts. Emblem takes care of everything, including, get this, free shipping worldwide. When it comes to something like a deployment shirt, you know you're going to have this for the rest of your life. So trust Emblem to deliver the best, guaranteed. Visit www.emblemathletic.com to get started with a free online store today. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you're listening from, and welcome to another episode of From the Green Notebook. Today we have a special episode for you, and Joe and I sit down with Major General J.P. McGee, current director of the Army Talent Management Task Force. This episode is being released to coincide with the BCAP or Battalion Commander Assessment Program results that are also coming out today. So we had this rare opportunity to sit down with Major General McGee and talk a little bit about the program. According to the website, the new talent management system is aiming to acquire, develop, employ, and retain the right talent for the future. And General McGee talks a little bit about how they're doing that, what they expect from the program, where they expect it to go, how they plan on monitoring it, and also how it compares with the past programs. What's different, what's better, and what they hope to improve. In this episode, Major General McGee makes it clear that there's not a shortage of talent when it comes to the officer pool in the United States Army. And their goal is to create a better system for finding, promoting, and harnessing that talent. So please welcome to the show, Major General J.P. McGee.
Well, thank you very much.
Sir, maybe you could just start off by briefly explaining to us what exactly the Commander Assessment Program is.
It's a great honor to be on your podcast and be able to explain this to you. And I know a lot of people want to understand the Commander Assessment Program, how that's been executed and the impact. And before I get into that, which I'll describe in as much detail as you'd like, I'd just like to understand the overarching pieces of how the Army is moving forward that this nests within. And so if you look at the way we manage our officers, it's largely been encapsulated by a law that came to us in about 1980. It came in 1980 as the Army was trying to adopt to an all-volunteer force. And that set of legislation was called the Defense Officer Personnel Management Act. And when that law was written, it was really taking the best ideas of how to manage people in the 60s and 70s and applying it to our way forward. If you look at what we had in the 60s and 70s, it was this very industrial-aged approach for how we manage people. And so the institutional imperative of the Army was take a large number of officers, get them to a minimal acceptable level of competence. And once they reach that minimum acceptable level of competence, to stick them into a number of positions that have been coded with just a few variables for those positions. So, you know, you would have an infantry KD captain, and then you had a bunch of positions across the Army that were coded for infantry KD captain. You also manage this on a system because of the large numbers that we're talking about. And you manage this on this conveyor belt time-based system that really, oh, collectively, the system said two things that as soon as I say them, you're going to realize that they're necessary for managing an old system, but really are not applicable anymore. So one is that all officers are the same, that our talents, our knowledge, skills, and behaviors are all the same. And the other one is that we all need to be managed on the exact same timeline. And so what we're trying to do in the Army's Talent Management Task Force is fundamentally move us from an industrial age system to an information age system, to move us from a data poor to a data rich. So instead of just knowing that you're an infantry KD captain, we're going to know you're an infantry KD captain who has superb writing skills, who has tremendous amount of cross-cultural fluency, who's interested in other cultures, and maybe therefore is a great person who would be selected to serve in an advisory mission as a security force assistance brigade member. stuff like that. And so as we're trying to move forward, this is all with an eye for us making a more effective, more combat effective army by which we can be ready to face near peer competitors, specifically Russia and China. And the imperative of this is as we start looking at what the future is going to hold and we start following to the national security strategy, and the national defense strategy in terms of getting ready to go to conflict and potentially into combat with near peer competitors, most of the advantages the United States has had over the last 100 years have been eroded with the rise specifically of a country like China that has a larger population and equivalently sized industrial base, if not larger, near technological parity. If you want to be able to compete, if you want to be able to deter aggression, if you want to be able to compete against a country like that, you have to maximize our strengths as a nation. And our strengths lie in many areas, but one of them is in the quality of the leadership and the people that we have. And so you don't get the most out of your people by applying old systems, old processes that probably when they're written 40 years ago in 1980 were probably starting to become a little outdated, but certainly are outdated today, where we have all sorts of new approaches to how to manage people and information technology that can allow us to see individual officers and soldiers and everyone in our army in a much more discreet way, much more granular way, as we understand better the knowledge, skills, behaviors, those talents of our officers, so we can use that to manage our people better in order to make us more effective for future conflict. So nested within that is the critical role of commanders. And everybody who's going to be listening to this podcast understands the centrality of commanders within the Army, whether that's a company commander, a battalion commander, or a brigade commander. And so the chief staff of the Army asked us to take a look at the way that we've been selecting battalion commanders. And when we did an analysis of it, we realized that what boards were doing was doing a very quick look, 90 seconds to 2 minutes worth of a review of a file, all based on paper. They were looking at the ORB, the photo, and they were looking about the last 5 OERs. They were making a very quick judgment of the person, giving that person a score. And as they would cycle through literally thousands of files, they would do that very cursory look. And so with the chief challenges with about 2 years ago was, is this the very best way for us to be able to select commanders, these critical positions, initially a battalion command? The chief thought that battalion command was absolutely critical because of the outsized role the battalion commanders have in the accomplishment of the Army's mission, both in training and in combat. The criticality of battalion commanders in terms of retaining our best soldiers, non-commissioned officers, and officers. And then the role of battalion command is one of the initial screens in the selection process to find those strategic leaders at the colonel level and then at the general officer level. And so he asked us to pilot a program. We did that in June and July of 2019 at Fort Benning. The results were very impressive in terms of the differences in how we could craft a system that would see officers in a much more holistic way in terms of picking those who became battalion commanders. And so in January and February of this year, 2020, we had 750 officers go through what we call BCAP 21, because it was establishing battalion commanders for fiscal year 21. In September, we ran the Colonel Commander Assessment Program. And when we looked at about 320 officers for consideration for the colonel's commander command level, so brigade level commanders effectively. And then in November of 2020, we ran our second iteration of BCAP, we call BCAP 22. And again, more than 700 officers processing through this entire program for us to be able to find the right battalion commanders. And with each of these iterations, what we've been able to find is that by adding additional relevant information, we think we make better decisions about those officers we put in charge of battalions and brigades. And so we go through now a 5-day process in terms of determining those officers who we're going to put in charge of large numbers of America's sons and daughters. And we adopt a much more holistic look. We take a look at all sorts of things. So certainly we still review their files. That's sort of like that allows you to get in the door to be considered a BCAP. And it's considered for CCAP as well. And then we look at their writing skills. We look at their verbal communication skills. We do a full psychological assessment of the candidates. We have them take a physical fitness test to measure their levels of physical fitness. And we bring in peer and subordinate information to find out whether those leaders that we're considering for command have actually been exercising leadership as we've taught them and trained them and asked them to do in all of our doctrine and all of our leadership training programs. And what we found for BCAP 21, CCAP 22, and BCAP 22 is that when we run this this process, you end up getting a different group of officers that we put in. Not completely. There's still a lot of officers who would have gone in command of the old system with the new system. But when we ran BCAP 21, we found that the change was about 33%. We found when we ran it for BCAP 22, the change was about 28%. And then the change for CCAP was roughly about the same, somewhere around 28% change. So that means, you know, we were able to drive significant change. I think one of the critical things about this is that we've been able to demonstrate that officers who maybe have an OER that's less than perfect have a level playing field in which they can come and compete and can be and still be selected for 05 or 06 level command. And then the final piece of this is now that we've run two battalion commander assessment programs within the year, is that we've had candidates who came through in BCAP 21 who were found not yet ready for command and came back in BCAP 22 and were found ready for command. So there is the opportunity for officers to work on identified weaknesses and work on their skills and come back a second time and be able to overcome that and be selected and determined as ready for command.
So for our listeners out there, for just the sake of transparency, like I went through the BCAP program in November, and I don't know the results yet. Like, and so I'm finding out the same time everybody else will. So the question I have for you is, I think a question that everybody's asking right now or wants to know is, can you talk a little bit about the results of this year's colonels and the battalion commanders assessment program?
So, yeah, so there is, in terms of the results, let me just talk through a couple of things. So here's one of the things that we can say definitively is through running BCAP 21 and BCAP 22 and CCAP 22, what we've got the ability to do is do a pairwise comparison. We can look at the officers that we would have selected who would have gone in under the purely CSL alone system and then the one that comes in through the commander assessment program. And here's what we can just state mathematically. What we can state mathematically is the officers who are selected through the commander assessment program are more physically fit, are better verbal communicators, are better written communicators, score more highly in a cognitive and non-cognitive assessment, and are less toxic. I mean, we know that, and we just know that for a fact because you can compare the scores. We're trying to develop a way to determine whether that translates into better battalion commanders down the line. That's going to be a longitudinal study that we're able to look at. But what we've been able to see is that we have officers who we think are not yet ready for command. That's determined for one of three reasons. One of them is because if they couldn't pass a height weight test. The other one is if they couldn't pass a three-event APFT test, get 60 points on each to score up 180 or higher. And then the final reason is if in the majority of the opinion during what we call the Army Comprehensive Talent Interview, which is a double-blind interview with the candidates, in which you have five panel members, all of whom are senior officers, brigade commanders, or general officers, who have a structured interview with a candidate. At the end of that interview, and after we brought all this information together, if the majority of the panel members believe that officer is not yet ready for command, that officer is determined not yet ready for command, and is allowed an opportunity to come back the following year and recompete for command if their timeline supports that. And what we're finding is, We are driving a change to the list. So the change for BCAP 22 is about a 28% change. That's down a little bit from a 34% change from BCAP 21. And for CCAP, it was about a 26% change. So stated in a different way for CCAP, for example, when we ran CCAP, if you take a look at the list of the names of 180 officers who would have gone into command under the legacy CSL system, the 06 level command, and you compared it to the list that came out through the Colonel's Commander Assessment Program, about one out of four name on the CCAP produce list is actually different than what you would have had from the legacy CSL system.
So, sir, when we were speaking earlier, you mentioned the diversity of leadership and that's a great thing and it's something that's needed in the United States Army. So when you give these, like the Army Commander Evaluation tool that's used, and you give them all the psych evals where you're asking the same questions, is there any fear that you might be taking that diversity away and we might be creating the same type of leader across the board?
That's a really good question. I'm not concerned about it right now, because what we're actually doing is building a foundational structure by which we can start asking some of those questions. And so what we've been able to do, and I mean, the numbers really are sort of impressive. We've run more than 1,800 officers now through this program, and each one of those, we've collected a tremendous amount of information about them. And what we've actually got now is an analytical structure by which we can start saying, like, what are the pieces that are common, what are not? What are the things that differentiate? So we can start doing longitudinal studies to sort of see what we have. But I think right now, because we have deliberately set up this process to be about general Army leadership qualities and those sort of attributes, what we're looking for are those people who meet those standards. So it's not like everybody has to look like an infantry officer or everybody has to look like a signal officer. We're talking about core fundamental Army leadership qualities that are relevant across. And I think where the next turn of development for this is as we bring in this information in the future, I think we can start using this to better assist us in the management of officers going forward. And I think one of the things this is going to help us see is there are plenty of officers who might not be ideal candidates for command, could be ideal candidates for all sorts of other positions at the 05 or 06 level, where they can greatly take their talents and contribute to the mission of the United States Army. And so this data collection, being able to see their talents, I think is going to be really important going forward. We've really focused now in just running an assessment and selection program, but I think this is going to evolve into something that really helps us manage our officer corps at the 05 and 06 level much better to get a better talent match for people that we're putting into positions.
Hey, sir, this year the Army unveiled the merit-based promotion systems for both the 06 and 05 list. Are the guys who are and the gals selected for battalion command, brigade command, are those the same ones on the merit-based promotion list, or is there a discrepancy? Are you starting to find a discrepancy there? Because one is based off past OERs, and the other one is this 360 assessment, which you're doing right now.
So those things are connected, but there's let me explain to you how the process works. So for BCAP, we are always, you know, we hope we're always going to have a significant number of officers who are interested in going in for battalion command, and probably more than we can accept through the commander assessment program. So we run the 05 CSL board, and then we bring in a select number of them into BCAP. So when we did BCAP 21, there were, I think, 1,135 officers who were considered and opted in for selection for 05 level command. We invited 750 based on the requirements for every branch to have a principal list and then a very robust alternate list. The way we determined the officers who we invited in is we ran the CSL board and we invited the top, you know, whatever number that was. It was infantry. The number was about the top 100 infantry officers were invited to that BCAP because there are about 60 principals and 40 alternates, for example. So we just went down the list, found that the top 100 infantry officers off the CSL list and invite them in. For cyber, I think there are two principal positions. They want to have a bench of six alternates. So we invite the top eight cyber officers to attend. That's what we did for BCAP. So within that group, certainly you would have officers who are BZ, and certainly you would have officers who are merit-based. For CCAP, it was a little bit differently because the numbers are smaller. We just invited everybody who opted in for 06 level command to come to CCAP. So it was a straight through. If you opted in for 06 level consideration through the CSL process, you were automatically invited to attend CCAP. But more directly to answer your question, were there officers or could there be a situation where an officer who was selected BZ to 05 or 06 or was selected merit-based to 05 or 06 who was not found ready for command and not put into command through the system run by the Commander Assessment Program? The answer is absolutely. Their merit-based or their BZ promotion would get them invited to attend the Commander Assessment Program, but it doesn't guarantee that they're going to be selected through the assessment program as someone who is ready for command.
So you talked a little bit, you touched on it before, about evaluating this program as it goes and continuing to look at it. Could you speak a little further on that and explain maybe what you're doing after these selections are made to monitor and continue to look at these candidates to make sure that the program is working or succeeding in the manner which you want it to?
Yeah, so we've spent a fair amount of work on trying to figure out how we can actually, you know, say that this is not only putting in officers who are better, you know, at PT and writing and stuff like that, but who are actually better battalion commanders. But then it really runs you down an interesting road that I'm going to take a couple of minutes to explain. It is very hard to actually isolate the variables associated with good battalion commanders that are quantifiable. Okay, and so let me explain this to you. So, you know, one of the things lots of things you may want us to take a look at to say, hey, we're putting better battalion, let's just use battalion commander, we're putting better battalion commanders into command through this new process. So one of the things you could say is that, well, we will have less relief for causes for battalion commanders. That would be a good thing for us to take a look at. And certainly we will continue to monitor that. But the fact of the matter is the Army relieves very few battalion commanders every year. So every year we have somewhere around 850, 860 O5 level CSL selected officers, central selection list selected officers. And every last year, the 5-year running average is around 8 officers a year get relieved from battalion command. Okay, so we're not like, it's not like we're relieving a bunch of battalion commanders. So we may drop that number. Hopefully that number will drop. Maybe we'll go from 8 to 4, and that would be a 50% drop. But even that, I mean, that's not like big numbers that that I think anybody would be tremendously impressed on. So we'll look at that, but that might be one thing we could see. The next one is you could take a look at junior officer retention, okay? But the problem with junior officer retention is junior officers make all sorts of decisions about staying in or getting out of the Army. And they make those decisions about other reasons other than their battalion commander. I think there's some evidence to suggest that strong battalion commanders would drive a higher level of retention amongst their junior officers. Certainly, I think that's intuitive to all of us who have served with good leaders or bad leaders. But the fact of the matter is, an officer's decision to stay or go is hinging upon lots of other factors, of which the battalion commander's quality is going to be maybe one of them, but might not even be the dominant one. It might be about a spouse. It might be about job opportunities. It might be about things that are happening with the family. It might be their overall desire to continue along with this lifestyle, all of which really aren't related to the battalion commander. So we'll track that. We'll keep an eye on it and we'll see, but I think that might be tough to specifically relate to the battalion commander. I think where we're going to see some interesting opportunities in the next couple of years is that, if I can just explain this to you, through the Army Commander Evaluation tool that we've been able to collect this information from peers and subordinates, we had a first group of colonels go through CCAP 22 who are not a product of the Commander Assessment Program. Like their first exposure and encounter with the Commander Assessment Program was in September when they ran through it. We've collected all the data on those officers. In 3 to 4 years, officers who've been selected for battalion command through the BCAP process are going to show up at CCAP. And so I think what you will be able to, I mean, I think hopefully what you'll see is that the officers who show up after as a product of BCAP and who show up at CCAP are in fact scoring more highly in the eyes of peers and subordinates about leadership qualities, positive, and lower on negative leadership qualities, as we like to see. And the interesting thing, just in terms of the differences, and it's straying a little bit from your question, is that you do start to see different trends in terms of how people look at leadership as battalion, as you're going into battalion command, leaving a staff position, and when you're going into colonel's level position. And what we found is that through peer and subordinate feedback, is that the officers who are being considered for colonel are seeing a higher level of negative leadership qualities than officers who are being considered for lieutenant colonel. And at face value, that might be a little bit about shocking, but as we've sort of reflected upon it, I mean, it sort of makes sense. So when you look at our system right now, you're selected as a battalion commander, really based on the strength of your skills as a staff officer, as a battalion or brigade S3 or XO, and how you're able to do that. But for the first time in your career as an officer, as a battalion commander, you're given a tremendous amount of authority as a battalion commander, to include UCMJ authority. You're given a tremendous amount of autonomy, and you get a staff that works for you for the first time. And so you really have a much greater opportunity to demonstrate some negative or positive leadership qualities at the O5 level. And I think that manifested itself in the way that we the results of what we saw as we started looking at foreign battalion commanders being considered through the Colonel's Commander Assessment Program. So back to your question about how we're going to quantify that, we're going to take a look at all of those things in order to try to say that we're finding better battalion commanders and better brigade commanders through this process. And if you've got any ideas on how we can also quantify this, our entire team is interested in how we can better quantify what it means to be a good battalion commander.
And sure, you were talking about, you know, just reflecting on the program, you know, since, you know, you've been there since the beginning, just kind of getting a little bit of philosophical right now. I mean, what do you think the results are telling us about leader reflection and self-awareness in the Army as it stands right now?
I think what we're seeing is, and I'm not trying to give you platitudes here, we've got a great officer corps. The vast majority of our officers who come before BCAP and CCAP are found to be high quality with great virtue and all of these great leadership qualities. And there's some that that don't have it at that high level and some that have it at a very low and distressing level. I think what we're seeing is that there is a strong correlation between not being successful at BCAP and CCAP with two key qualities that I think is important for officers and is related to some degree to your ability to reflect and think about your leadership style. One of those is a sense of self-awareness. Are you aware of how your actions are impacting those around you? Are you aware of how you're perceived? Are you aware positively or negatively what influence you're having on other people? That's one. And then the other is, what is your level of empathy? Have you invested as a leader to understanding different perspectives? I think that becomes, frankly, more important as you become a senior officer, as you're looking at working with officers and non-commissioned officers who are not just of your branch or your tribe, and you're trying to bring together a diverse team that has all sorts of different skill sets to accomplish these very complicated missions that we have. So these twin skills of self-awareness and empathy are really coming to the forefront of the qualities that we need to have in our leaders. And frankly, if you don't do well in that process, you probably are absent one or both of those. Both of those can be augmented and assisted and developed, I think, with a degree of self-reflection on your impact as a leader and how your actions are affecting people around you.
So that's a great segue into our next question. 1,135 opted in for consideration, I believe, in the first BCAP. 660 ultimately were selected as principals and alternates. What message do you have for the 500, almost 500 that weren't selected? You know, we talk a lot on the podcast about how failures can really lend to growth. What message would you have going forward and their future as possibly in the program?
Yeah, so I think the numbers are just a little bit different. And so there are 1,100, for BCAP 21, is 1,135 who were considered. There were 750 who were invited. And then from that, we chose 436. And so, of the 436, that difference between 436 and 1,135, I would say this, and I say these things, and I know sometimes, people will look at the path I've had and they've said, well, it's easy for you to say this. But one of the things I have increasingly seen as I've become more senior is the incredible ability of officers to be able to contribute to the mission of the United States Army in all sorts of different capacities. I think as you become a more senior officer, you see the vital importance of these different functional areas that we put officers into and how critical those become as you sort of get above the tactical and start, edging into the operational or strategic. And I just would say, if you weren't selected the first time through the Commander Assessment Program, I strongly encourage you to come back. I think, people are able to recompete successfully the second time. And even if you were found not yet ready for command, a strong potential you'll be found ready the second time around. We can demonstrate that now with the numbers as we have people who've gone through this twice. But if command's not in your future, there are all sorts of great things you can do as a lieutenant colonel or as a colonel to help make our Army better, to help make our nation better. And I just would ask you to consider where you think you can uniquely contribute to the mission of the United States Army and then take advantage of things that we've extended, like the Army Talent Alignment Process, in order to go after those positions that you can now see and have complete transparency on, so you can continue to contribute in positions outside of a command position.
With this being the second year of the program, I've been away from the conventional Army for a little bit, but I can see as I go back in that, battalion commanders and brigade commanders are going to want to help, leaders better prepare for this, so captains and majors aren't facing this the first time as they go through the BCAP process. So what advice would you give them to help prepare, their leaders for, moving into this later on in their career or kind of increasing their own self-awareness and reflection?
Sure. So one of the things we're doing is we're taking these assessments and we're taking some of these different inputs that we have at the Commander Assessment Program, and we're adding them structurally into our institutional educational system. So you'll start to see these coming into the Captain's Career Course and into CGSC and ILE, and you'll start seeing it. So you know, in the future, this won't be something that's just thrust upon you as you're being looked at for battalion command for the first time. This will be something that you've grown up with in a system, this culture of assessments that we're trying to bring in. And that includes peer and subordinate feedback. That includes a number of these assessments to help you better see yourself and then work on your own development. In the nearer term, first off, I would discourage commanders from trying to overly game this system and, you know, run massive prep camps for what needs to be done or does not need to be done. I think we would have a better officer corps if everybody focused on working on their communication skills, written skills in terms of verbal communication skills. I think that would be helpful. And frankly, that's intended. We have sent out the scoring rubric to every officer who attends these. This is known by all the participants who come in. And we're trying to do that to get officers to take seriously their own need for self-development in written and verbal communications. Some things that we frankly struggle with in some areas, and we could do a lot better. And I think you'll see by doing that, we're going to just have a better officer corps. We're going to communicate more clearly. I think anything that can be done at the local level that will help leaders get in that peer and subordinate feedback about the quality of the leadership that they're providing in a non, you know, sort of cap way, I think that helps illuminate them. I think that would be a great thing for commanders to start working on. I think that helps them with their self-awareness in terms of them understanding how they're perceived by peers and subordinates. And some of the other things like physical fitness, I just think we need to take that more seriously and make sure that when we're administering our different physical fitness tests, we're making sure we maintain the standard. We're not letting things slide because we have field grade officers who are taking these tests and we administer them fairly as we should always be doing. I think all of those things will help drive us to have a better officer corps and a better cadre of officers who show up competing for command in the future, because we know now that you're going to be assessed against the standard for that. And then the final piece is, when you take a look at the questions that are embedded in the Army Commander Evaluation Tool, at this point, we have hundreds of thousands of people who have taken that. I mean, what you'll see is every question is designed against the Army Leadership Requirements Model. I mean, every question we ask really is effectively saying is this officer exhibiting and demonstrating leadership as we've tried to teach that officer to do from when they were cadets to the basic course, to the captain's career course, to CGSC. And now we've got a mechanism by which we can actually start to solicit the input from peers and subordinates to find out whether that's actually what's happening, or whether this is an officer who's been able to mask that and keep that away from their superiors as they've treated people in a manner that, frankly, they should not be treating their peers and subordinates. And so I think we've been able to, I think that's going to have a positive impact in terms of the way officers demonstrate leadership in the future.
Thanks for that answer, sir. And I just got to put a quick plug in. One of the things that you mentioned in your answer was written communication. And, you know, from the Green Notebook, one of the things that we've been doing for years now is working with officers and NCOs who've submitted posts on taking their initial drafts and getting them to where they're publishable. So, you know, if anybody is looking at improving their writing skills and has some great ideas they want to share with the rest of the Army, I encourage you to submit to the website. And that's something that we can help you on. And then when you find yourself in the battalion commander assessment program, it's not your first time writing.
Today's episode is also sponsored by veteran-owned Alpha Coffee Company. Their premium 100% Arabica coffee is freshly roasted for a bold, delicious flavor. Alpha Coffee supports veteran charities and has donated over 19,000 bags of coffee to deployed troops. They also offer a combinable 10% military discount and 10% off for subscriptions. Taste the Alpha difference. Purchase their coffee today from their online store or via Amazon Prime. Sir, the program also offers coaching, and one of the constant themes on this show is the importance of mentorship when it comes to leader development. So my question is, can you just talk a little bit about how the coaching program works, and are your people taking advantage of it?
I'd love to answer that question. And I would like to draw a slight difference between two terms that we use that frankly, I used to sort of use interchangeably. And I think the way we're trying to define them going forward is we'd like to differentiate. And so a lot of us talk about mentorship. And, you know, I clearly have been the product of lots of officers who have mentored me. And I try to do the same to officers who I've served with. And that mentorship piece is absolutely vital. okay, that mentorship, and you know, you have a conversation with a subordinate who you care about, and that subordinate shares information with you, and you use that for their development. That is critical in terms of moving our officer corps forward. The coaching piece, though, and this is where I think there's a little bit of a change, as we're trying to establish this within the Army, plays a different function. The coach is someone who is not a member of the chain of command and who is a little bit of an outsider, who can be someone that an officer has a conversation with that's very direct and is really focused on their skills development and career development. But the thing is that person is outside of the chain of command and is generally, you know, outside of, well, certainly outside of the chain of command. And you can see how in that context, you can have a much different conversation than you may want to have with a mentor. Like, you know, you may have a conversation with one of your mentors and you may not want to recognize that you've got very weak writing skills. With a coach, you can say, look, I know I am not writing as well as my peers, and I need to do some work to fix this. Can you help me with this? And that's the role of the coach. And so as we've rolled out the Army coaching program, and this is another program that's gone really from zero at the beginning of the year to now more than 1,000 officers enrolled in it. What we're trying to do is link officers up with executive coaches. And these are trained executive coaches who are certified through an external process, not inside the Army. There's an entire executive coaching industry that exists out there. And so all these coaches are certified. First up, administer an assessment that helps us figure out where their skills are. And then they go forward with a developmental plan to work on the identified strengths and weaknesses that they have. And it's all outside of the chain of command. It's all confidential in terms of the relationship between the individual officer and that coach. And it's really focused solely on the development of the officer, not on the sort of institution. And so that's, I think, how we're breaking that out. And I think you're going to see in 2021, the Army coaching program is going to continue to expand as we've moved this into different venues. But what we've done is we've extended this to every officer who has attended the Commander Assessment Program. I think one of the constant criticisms I hear about the Commander Assessment Program is that they don't get enough feedback. What I try to explain is the purpose of the Commander Assessment Program is to select commanders, and any development of the officer is going to be secondary, and we can't risk degrading the quality of our assessment program by oversharing information from the assessments that we run. But seeing that and understanding that, what we've offered to everyone is the opportunity to have a coaching program that focuses on their development after they're done with the Commander Assessment Program. We've also moved that now into ILE, where we're in CGSC, where we're trying to find officers who are interested in taking these coaching programs and develop their skills as well. So we're continuing to move this out across the rest of the Army. And in 2021, I think you're going to see a significant expansion of it.
After doing this program for a while, how's it changed your outlook on leadership?
I think a number of things. I think it has made me aware that we all have blind spots in terms of how we see people and how we see subordinates, and how a program like the Commander Assessment Program helps us fill in some blind spots on things that we didn't see. And sometimes that's very positive, and sometimes that's very negative, and sometimes it's somewhere in between. But, you know, maybe officers that were not as fully appreciated by senior, raiders and senior raiders. But when you read the peer and subordinate, I mean, they idolize these officers for just being stellar in every sort of way. The flip side of that is some people that we thought were great have clearly been identified as those who don't have the qualities for high level leadership, at least not yet, and need to do some work to get to become the leader that we want to put in charge of large formations. So that's a piece of it. The other piece of it is, I think we need to really focus on having officers understand their impact. This idea of empathy and self-awareness being a critical component to leadership, especially as you become, you know, higher ranking and you're in charge of larger and larger formations. And then I think the idea of how, in terms of leadership, I think one of the flaws that many, at least I've run with, at least for a good chunk of my career, is this sort of determination that the only way you can be successful in the Army is through this command track, which means you constantly are going to higher levels of command. And certainly that is a path. But there are all sorts of other ways where great Americans who are officers can use their talents to contribute to the defense of their nation, to the United States Army. And part of those things is bringing those people together, finding out what those talents are, and then using them to propel whatever organization we have, whether that's the Army Talent Management Task Force or a battalion or a brigade, to make the Army better. And I think you do that through better insight, better collection, and being able to see your people in a much more granular level so you can maximize what they bring. So, I mean, I think when you really take a look at the qualities that we have within our officer corps, we have some unbelievable talent out there in all sorts of different fields. And I think one of the things we need to do as we start developing these new systems is making sure that we maximize them to make us the very best possible Army we can be.
Sir, thank you so much for sitting down with us, and thank you so much for speaking with us. Just curious, are there any book recommendations that you'd give to the folks out there before they head off to BCAP?
Thanks for the question. And I'll probably expand it beyond just simply going to the Battalion Commander Assessment Program and expand it for those looking to go into Battalion Command. But I'd recommend 5 books that are a mix of sort of skills development for a battalion commander, as well as giving you some overarching perspectives on some of the fields and areas that you're going to need to understand as you become a more senior officer. So I think if you're getting ready to become a battalion command, one of the first books I'd recommend is a classic. It's We Were Soldiers Once and Young by Lieutenant General Retired Hal Moore. Talks about his experience as a battalion commander in the 1st Cavalry Division in the Battle of the Ydrang. An exceptionally gifted leader who really embodied all of our Army values in the face of tremendous adversity as he was fighting his battalion outnumbered against the North Vietnamese. And so it's just a classic book about battalion command. And while it's combat arms focused, the principles and qualities that he describes are what are really at the pinnacle of all the things we're looking for any commander within our Army. I'd also recommend a book called Range by David Epstein. The subtitle of that is Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. And it's a way of looking at talent. And the author Epstein's thesis is that in order to get the right leaders for the future, you want to have people who are not narrowly specialized, but people who have a broad experience in multiple different backgrounds to bring those problem sets to bear. And the experience of the individuals bringing these different perspectives is tremendously important as we start facing what he describes as wicked problems in a complicated and complex world. I think a great companion reader to that is a book called Rebel Ideas by Matthew Syed. Really with that, it's S-Y-E-D. And that book is emphasizing the importance of bringing together teams that are divergent and diverse in all sorts of different ways, from backgrounds to perspectives to education. And I think simply put, his thesis is that if you want to have organizations that excel in a future complicated and complex environment, what you need to have is a leadership team that is able to expand to the full complexity of the future environment instead of a group of people surrounding the leader or the commander who all look at the problem the same way, come from the same background, have the exact same perspectives. It's a tremendously articulate case for why diversity is an operational imperative as we go forward into these complicated, complex environments that we imagine in the future. Associated with that is another book that I think is related to a critical skill as a battalion commander and later, and it's about how we bring in information, sift through information, and make wise decisions based on the information that's presented. And so what I think helps a lot with that is a book called Factfulness by Hans Rosling, R-O-S-L-I-N-G. And the subtitle of his book is 10 Reasons We're Wrong About the World and Why Things Are Better Than You Think. And what he does is he goes and describes all the reasons why people have innate biases and sometimes don't bring in the right information and don't see things clearly and logically as they start making decisions. And as a senior Army leader, as you become battalion commander, it is critically important for you to be able to bring in information, process it, and then make smart decisions. And this book helps highlight some of the issues that present challenges to all of us as we do that. Then the final book I'd recommend is about an element of command that I think is critically important and often not emphasized enough, and that's the element of trust that needs to exist within any strong battalion or organization. So I'd recommend the 10 Laws of Trust, Building Bonds That Make a Business Great by Joel Peterson. It's a great step-by-step and a series of actions that leaders can take to ensure that they build trust with their subordinates, trust with their superiors, and trust with their peers, all of which I think is critical to being an effective leader at the battalion commander level, O5 level, and above. But so that's 5 books. All of them I give my strong recommendation to, and I hope you enjoy them if you start working through this list.
No, that's great, sir. You know, Joe, on our first episode, talked about the fact that he's trying to create people to lead with the best version of themselves. And I think your program is certainly going to do that for the Army. So really appreciate you sitting down with us today.
That was great to talk to you. Appreciate all you're doing in terms of getting the message out. And you know, you continue to do great work by giving venues for us to be able to come in here and communicate to such a wide audience. So thank you very much.
Thank you again to all our listeners for joining us on another episode of From the Green Notebook. Check us out at fromthegreennotebook.com, where you can download past episodes, read some of our previous blog posts, and sign up for our monthly reading list and Sunday email. If you enjoy the podcast so far, please subscribe and give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And follow us on Twitter at FTG Notebook, as well as Instagram and Facebook. You can find us by just searching From the Green Notebook. So this is Jacob Goronski signing off. And hope you tune in to our next episode. I came from the moon.